You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Monday to you, everybody, and happy Veterans Day to all of the veterans who have served in our armed forces. We're thankful for you. Right here on the screen, my two favorite veterans, that's Bob Jones on the left, Tom Stockton on the right. Those are my two grandfathers, a couple of Navy war veterans. And so we thank everyone for all of their service here today on Veterans Day. A lot to get to on our podcast. We've got Razorback football back in action this week as Texas comes to town at Razorback Stadium on Saturday morning. But obviously the big story over the weekend, Arkansas basketball. The Razorbacks lose to Baylor 72-67 on Saturday night down in Dallas. Anthony Christensen here with me to start out the show. Anthony was there at American Airlines Center. And Anthony, this game really kind of played out the way that I thought it might play out. The fact that you had a Baylor team who had gone out and really tested itself in the first game of the year at Gonzaga, and they had had some flaws, obviously, exposed in that game. That's not to say Arkansas didn't test itself in the preseason. They did. They played TCU. They played a version of Kansas. Although I think if you watch the KU-North Carolina game on Friday night, you realize that the version of Kansas that the Razorbacks got on October 25th at Bud Walton Arena is not the real, that's not the number one Jayhawks. But, you know, it kind of played out the way I thought it would. I thought that maybe Arkansas just would I thought Baylor probably would be more prepared to make the plays down the stretch, and I think that was kind of the way things turned out. And this is why you play these games.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you look at, you know, the box score and everything, the thing that's going to jump out to you from an Arkansas perspective is the 5-of-20 from three, right? And that's something that they've continued to struggle with. They are yet to shoot over 30% from three in any of the four games, including the exhibitions that Calipari has coached. So maybe that's a struggle or a concern, I should say. I mean, Baylor came out in zone for a lot of the night and tried to, I guess, kind of force those shots. But Scott Drew had said, I asked him about it post-game, and he said, you know, yeah, we went out in zone. But, you know, he expects Arkansas to be a team that kind of improves in that department as the season goes on, just because of all the newcomers and everything. And John Calipari had also mentioned that, and he's mentioned it a lot, that they just haven't had the chance to, you know, work against his own just because of, you know, injuries and preseason and everything like that. I couldn't tell you how many times he said we were down to five guys in the preseason. So they couldn't work on a lot of different things. So that's the thing that jumps out at you. But then there are other things as well. I mean, when you get, you know, a combined 6 points out of your three big guys in Zvonimir Ivicic, Trevor Brazil, and Jonas Adu, you know, you need more production out of those guys, right? And there were good moments. I thought Trevor Brazil had a few good moments, especially on the defensive end. He finished 2-of-3 from the field. His only miss was a three-pointer from the field. He missed a free throw as well, but... there were still some good moments. Ivicic had a block as well, or at least one block, one that comes to mind. But, you know, some good moments. But I think the big takeaway, at least for me, was Adu Thiro, and just kind of his progression on the offensive end. I wrote a decent story about it, a decent length story. I mean, if it's decent or not, just from a reading perspective, that's up to the reader.
It was satisfactory.
I'll take it. I mean, just the way he, you know, attacks the rim. I mean, I asked John Calipari about it. You know, he said he's, quote, in attack mode now. And he's not, and this is kind of my own observation, he's not deferring to Rob Dillingham or Reed Shepard or Antonio Reeves at this point. Like, he's really taking on a leadership role in that offense. And Boogie Fland as well. I think he finished with 7 assists. Not the most efficient shooting night for him, but he was 3-of-5 from three. I think he and Adu Thiro were the only guys on Arkansas to make a three. But I probably went too long. I'm sorry.
You mentioned Trevin Brazil. Arkansas was they outscored Baylor by 1 point in his 22 minutes on the floor. They were outscored. Everybody else had a negative plus minus performance against Baylor. This is what John Calipari had to say after the game.
First half can't be on them because we just haven't worked that much against zone because we haven't scrimmaged. We've had five guys for weeks. Halftime, we went in and said, all right, we got to do this way. And I think you saw that we moved the ball. The reason Scott stayed in it, and he should have, we look so bad in the, against the zone. Why would you get out of it?
That video, courtesy of KNWA, the video, the situation in Dallas was not that great the other night. The zone. I thought about this this comment that Calipari had made after the game. Remember against Kansas? He said he asked Bill Self not to run a zone defense because, quote, we haven't had time to put a zone offense in yet. Now you see Baylor come out and play zone, and Calipari, you know, he talked about it, that basically they're trying to fix this on the fly during the game, that they go in at halftime and they say, okay, now you need to do this, you did this, this, this. And he felt like they played better against it in the second half. Mm-hmm. You know, my question is, like, when do they get this zone offense installed? Because it's not like there's just an abundance of practice time now. We're in the games. We're in a stretch where you're going to be playing every 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, and to that point, I mean, you're going to see a lot of teams line up in the zone defense, right? But, I mean, you look at, you know, their next few games, at least the next two up the top of my head are Troy and Pacific, which Troy is obviously they're always decent. Pacific was one of the worst teams in the country last year, coaching change and everything like that. So, I mean, those teams lining up in zone, maybe you can, you know, get that, like, in-game work on that front. Not to disrespect either of those teams, but you would expect Arkansas, especially an Arkansas team with the roster that they have, to be able to beat those teams and kind of work on, you know, zone offense and stuff like that. So that would be kind of my answer to the question of, like, where you work on this at this point of the season is, you know, I mean, that's why you schedule some of these non-conference games.
I felt like, for the most part, Baylor took Arkansas just totally out of its offense. I mean, there was a point in the game as I'm watching it, and I'm like, every basket that Arkansas has either come in transition off a turnover, off a second chance opportunity, or at the free throw line. I think it was like 17 to 19 points into the game before Arkansas actually got a basket out of their offensive sets. And that was really kind of a problem for them, I felt like, the entire game. I mean, you look at it, if they don't hit 14 of 17 free throws, this is a blowout. Mm-hmm. You know, they had 15 fast break points, they had 10 second chance points, all of those kind of combined to, you know, kind of hold things together and give them a chance to win at the end. They got to figure something out, though, in their offensive sets, because those just have not been real pretty through a couple of games.
Yeah, no, and you mentioned the offensive rebounds. I believe it was at the first media timeout in the first half, they had four offensive rebounds, and then I think they had two the rest of the half, if I'm not mistaken. Ended up finishing with 12, six in the first half, excuse mm-hmm. me, 12 overall. But, you know, you kind of want to see those guys kind of attack the offensive glass more. It's something we talked about after the Lipscomb game. But, I mean, you mentioned the free throws. I mean, that's something you like. You want to see a lot of free throws. That means they're trying to get to the basket, mm-hmm. which I mean, that kind of brings up again Adu Thiro, finished, I believe it was 10 of 15 from the field. You know, he had a lot of success driving to the basket. Boogie Fland had some success going to the basket as well. And John L. Davis's two field goals, obviously, I think he finished like 2 of 9, missed a lot of threes. But, you know, his two field goals were when he was going to the basket, which is where he found success against Lipscomb. So you want to see those guys, you know, going to the basket, attacking the rim and everything like that. And then to the point of, you know, forcing turnovers, I believe they had five steals. And you want to get get that out of transition. And you probably want to see more steals out of, you know, some of these guys, like nobody had more than one.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've seen it before, right? You know, these guys are, there's a lot of good defenders on this team, guys who can, you are in your face on ball defenders who can force those steals. You know, like a Boogie Fland, I believe he had 6 steals against Kansas, which obviously not the same Kansas that we are accustomed to seeing. But still, I mean, you want to see more steals and more getting out in transition and stuff like that.
And more assists. The assists, that's the number that stands out to me right now. 23 assists through 2 games on 58 made baskets.
Yeah.
No, that's not going to, yeah. I mean, when you get into, and Baylor's a good defensive team, but when you get into the meat of your schedule, that number is not going to be able to be sustainable, I feel like.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I wonder how much of that does kind of come down to, you know, Baylor obviously being, you know, a Scott Drew team, a very good defensive team, you know, and coming out in his zone. I mean, sometimes when Arkansas was playing against Baylor zone, it was like, you know, just kind of passing around the perimeter, trying to find a way inside, and mm-hmm. they just couldn't do it. And maybe that's why they kind of relied on throwing up some threes there, especially with the 0-of-9 start from the perimeter. So you're right. You want to see that number improve, especially you want to see more, you know, throwing inside. And like I had mentioned earlier, like you need to, you know, get more production out of your big guys. Six combined points out of your three bigs probably isn't going to win a ton of games.
John Calipari was asked after the game, how much did you get out of this game? How much good did you get out of this game? This is what he had to say.
Like, you could play a team and try to win by 50. And what you learn is we can beat that kind of team by 50. But the teams you're trying to compete with are like this team, like a Kansas. That these kind of people that we're playing. And then playing them away from our building is important too. To, okay, you don't have the home crowd riding you. Can we come together and do this? And let me say, I want to thank all the Arkansas fans because it's crazy. Half the building was Arkansas people. I'm just disappointed we didn't win. But I hope they say they fought, they tried. They're doing some good things. I can see they got a ways to go, but it's a good group.
During the game Saturday on ESPNU, they said that Baylor is going to make a return trip to Fayetteville next year as part of the agreement to play this game. Scott Drew was asked about it afterward. He kind of gave a no comment type answer. I mean, he kind of gave an answer without giving an answer, right?
Yeah, I had asked him the question, and he didn't say no. kind of, if I remember correctly, kind of gave a little smile and nod, and then was like, "Yeah, maybe we should play him in Dallas again. This was fun," something like that. But he certainly didn't deny that.
So I don't know quite where I was going with this, but the point being that I think this is where I'm going with this is that I don't know. But let's move on. Let me refocus here for a minute. This is what Scott Drew had to say about playing Arkansas.
And we're us in Arkansas, two peas in a pod, meaning you got a lot of talented players, but it's kind of like back in the day with the Olympics when you'd put all-star game teams together and it was a lot harder to win rather than teams that played years together. And I think Arkansas and us just improve each and every day, and we're at the best in February and not right now.
I'm refocused now. Arkansas and Baylor, they're very similar teams in that Baylor had, what, one returner from last year?
Something
is that right?
That, yeah.
Arkansas has exactly one returner and Trevin Brazil. So, I mean, these are clearly two teams that are learning how to play together still.
Yeah, and you obviously you saw that when Baylor played against Gonzaga, right? I believe Gonzaga has 8 of its 9 top, you know, returners from last season back. That might be a wrong number, but it's a lot. And you play that game in Spokane. Obviously they're going to learn a lot, and I think they did. And then, you know, you get Arkansas playing against, you know, a good Lipscomb team that should be good, because it's still too early in the season to really say, you know, this team is going to be good and that team is going to be good. But a Lipscomb team that should be good, that has a lot of continuity. So, I mean, you're kind of getting those lessons against, you know, a team like that, and then playing against a team like Baylor that, you know, is obviously well coached. Scott Drew is, you know, one of the best coaches, if not, I mean, I don't think he's the best coach in the game, but he's one of the best coaches in the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're getting those lessons, like he had mentioned. I think both these teams are going to improve quite a bit, you know, as the season progresses, and you're going to see, you know, against, you know, some of these lesser non-conference opponents, you're going to be able to see Arkansas, you know, learn more about playing against a zone defense. And, you know, obviously, you put up like 40 points or a 40-point win against Pacific. I'm not making a prediction, by the way. That's just, a hypothetical. and, you know, you do that, you know, against a zone defense. You know, obviously, you get into SEC play, you're going to be playing against better players. But, you know, it's good to just get that kind of experience.
I know what I was going to ask you now when I had the Bella Vista moment a minute ago is that what was the atmosphere like in the arena?
Because it rocked.
Calipari said that he thought Arkansas had at least 50% of the crowd, and that's how it looked on TV, if not more.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. I mean, it was a true – I kind of felt like it was pretty 50-50. It was like a true neutral site game, which I love. I love a neutral site game. I love a tournament field game.
Well, that's good because you're going to get a lot of them under John Calipari.
Yeah. But no, it was awesome. I mean, credit to everybody who put that game on. It was a great time. Awesome environment. I mean, the Baylor fans were there. Would have liked to see like the Arkansas band make a trip down there too. But
I heard some people upset about this, the fact that the band and the cheer squad were not there.
Yeah, no, so that kind of maybe
detracted a little
bit.
Baylor was the designated home team, though. Yes, I don't know if that affects that at all.
Maybe.
I'm not sure.
To be honest, I don't know either. Maybe I should, so I'm sorry, everybody.
And like listening to, just reading between the lines, if Baylor's going to come to Fayetteville next year, it almost felt as if maybe Baylor gave up a home game at that new facility on campus to play in American Airlines Center.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, that was kind of what it felt like.
Yeah, maybe. And Scott Drew had talked a little bit about you know, how cool it is to play for his players to play in an NBA arena.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after the game and everything. Obviously, some of those players are going to be doing that anyway in the not-too-distant future. I mean, guys like VJ Edgecombe and guys mm-hmm. like that. But, no, it maybe. but, no, it was a great environment, true neutral court, kind of 50-50 support, and it was a ton of fun to be there and cover it. It was a great atmosphere.
A lot of interesting SEC games over the weekend. There was a game Friday night where Arkansas State actually went to Tuscaloosa and gave the Crimson Tide a tight game. And did you mm-hmm. see that Arkansas State's bus, it broke down on the way to Tuscaloosa? And I
did not see that.
I guess their head coach got out and
oh, no, I did hear about this. Skills. Yes. Brian Hutchin, you've like fixed the bus or something.
He like fixed the belt in the bus and got it going again, and they were able to get on their way to Tuscaloosa.
No, that's fantastic. But, I mean, not Arkansas
He's
State.
He's a former
team,
Alabama like, assistant
yes,
coach,
Yes, he is,
too.
Yeah. He was under Nate Oates for a couple of years, and now obviously the head coach at Arkansas State, not Arizona State, at Arkansas State. And that's a good team. I mean, they're going to be, you know, right up there in the Sun Belt. I mean, they were good last year. I believe it was their first 20-win season in quite some time. I don't remember the exact year, but, I mean, they can shoot. I mean, he drives, I mean, very similar offense to what Nate Oates does, very analytically driven, not afraid to shoot early in the shot clock if the shot is there. Love to get to the rim, but they also loves threes. You know, he doesn't like the mid-range shot unless it's absolutely necessary, but not to dive too deep into Arkansas State, but yeah.
Tennessee beat Louisville at the Yum Center on Saturday morning, 77-55. And then Auburn beat Houston in Houston Saturday night, 74-69. That's the question is, you know, would you rather win a game and have the public embarrassment that Auburn did where you've got the air traffic controller.
Horseplay.
I think it's a little bit more than horseplay. But you've got the air traffic controller who says that, I don't know if we're not sure if we're able to play this because there was a news clip that said, you know, we've heard the air traffic control call, but we can't play it for legal reasons. I don't know what the legal reasons would be, but I'm not, I'm not up on.
I'm not an expert in aviation law.
Blake, I mean, you're FAA licensed to fly a drone. Can you think of any reason why you can't play an air traffic control clip?
Well, like Anthony, I'm not an expert in aviation law. My thing is bird law. But as far as airplanes, you know, mechanical aviation,
Pigeon legislation.
So anyway, so somebody put a clip on social media and it had the FlightAware clip of the Auburn plane getting out maybe like over Mississippi and then having to turn around and go back to Montgomery, and it had the air traffic control clip over the top of it. So we can't play it, but do you want to reenact it?
I don't have the script in front of me.
Well, I've got
I'll be honest. I'm not much of an actor.
This is just a little bit of what the pilot said. He goes, "We've got an altercation on board. We'd like to declare an emergency and land." And they're like, "We got a bunch of basketball players fighting. We had two players that got into a physical altercation. Clothes were ripped and one bloody player."
It's so funny. To be frank, it probably shouldn't be funny because, if you looked at the airplane, I believe somebody had posted a picture of the air. It's a small plane, and I was listening to something about it. Like, if something like that is happening on a plane that small, it is a genuinely dangerous.
They never see the
situation.
Seinfeld finale.
jump on the airplane.
Yeah, there you go.
but if something like that happens on a plane that small, it is a genuinely dangerous situation. Apparently, like I said, I'm no aviation expert, but After they beat Houston and like Jani Broome and all the players were going like,
yeah,
I was laughing very hard.
Like,
it
would you
was
rather,
very funny.
Would you rather win a game and have that public embarrassment that they did, or lose a game like Arkansas did and not have any of your players kicked off the airplane?
I mean, I'm a competitor, so I'm always on the side of winning, right?
Apparently the plane was diverted back to Montgomery. Montgomery to Auburn's probably a 45-minute drive, somewhere in there. It's the closest, you know, major airport that serves Auburn. And, like, what happens? Because they didn't get to make the trip to Houston. Do they just, like, leave them at the airport and say, find your own way home? Does the staffer who's really looking forward to going to Houston and it's like, hey, you got to stay here and get a rental car and take these idiots back to campus?
Yeah, I don't know if that's like a GA job or like a I don't know. Maybe they Uber.
I have no idea.
Man.
Yeah, a GA. That is a total pay your dues job. You know, when you're a head coach in 15 years, you think about
you're going to remember driving the guys who got kicked off. Do you think they rode in the same car?
I'd hope not. Maybe two GAs had to drive them back to Auburn. Don't make me cool. Yeah, I mean, like, it's like the pilot's like, don't make me turn this plane around. Yeah. That's kind of what happened.
No McDonald's for you.
All right, Anthony, thanks. Here, real quick, before we end. Quick thought, Arkansas women won their elementary school day Friday.
Very loud.
beat East Texas A&M 84-65.
Yes, the artist formerly known as Texas A&M Commerce. I mean, there were some good moments, obviously. Kiki Smith, obviously JUCO transfer, JUCO Player of the Year, if I'm not mistaken, national champion. Right. She was outstanding. I believe she shot 8 of 9, started 8 of 8 from the field. She was very, very good. There were some concerning moments. I mean, they had a point at the start of the second quarter. I believe it was six turnovers in the first couple of minutes. And East A&M, is that something we can call them? I don't know. Went on a little bit of a run to cut it close. But then they gave up a lot of offensive rebounds as well, which is something to monitor as the season goes on. But a win's a win. And they had some good moments, like I mentioned, Kiki Smith. Izzy Higginbottom kind of taking a lot of the defensive focus for East A&M, which kind of allowed for somebody like Kiki Smith to get hot. So maybe that's something that we can monitor going forward as something to watch.
The UA women play UA Little Rock tonight down at the Stevens Center in Little Rock. So we'll have more from that game on our website, wholehogsports.com. This evening, also this afternoon, Arkansas soccer will earn its NCAA tournament seeding. That'll be about, 3 o'clock? I think it's a selection.
3 o'clock, a non-zero chance that they're playing against my sister at Missouri State, because they just they won the Missouri Valley Conference regular season and tournament. So shout out Julia Christensen and shout out the Missouri State Bears.
So we'll know the Arkansas path to the College Cup this afternoon.
Yes.
And Anthony will have more on that. On our website as well. When we come back, Christina Long will join me in studio. We'll talk about a big weekend for SEC football, but first a word from our sponsors.
Rank North Florida.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Christina Long here with me now. Arkansas and plays Texas Saturday. It's an 11 a.m. kickoff over at Razorback Stadium. This will be televised by ABC, and we just learned last night, Joe Tessitore, Jesse Palmer, Katie George. On the call, same crew that was here when Texas played Arkansas 3 years ago.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't realize that. That's so funny.
I don't know if Palmer was on that. Mm-hmm. You know, because they changed the play-by-play and the color people, you know, fairly often. You know, sometimes you get people who stay together for multiple years, but I do remember very vividly Joe Tessitore and Katie George being on that call.
You would remember that.
I mean, I was at the game. It wasn't like I was really paying attention. But that's one of those, you know, and in most games I go back and I just kind of, you know, flip through and right. see some highlights. I remember one of Tessitore's calls for some reason pretty vividly. And then obviously, you know, you get the field rush like Arkansas had during that game. And Katie George out there with her microphone, mm-hmm. and there's pictures of that. But I remember that for some
That's
reason.
So funny. We've talked about this before. I know I'm not normal in terms of most sports fans with this, but I never really notice or pay attention that closely to who's on the call of a game I'm watching. Like I think a lot of people have their favorite and least favorite people, and I feel like a lot of them I can't tell that. You know, there's some people who have very distinctive voices or people that there's like icons and stuff like that I know who they are. But I feel like whenever I'm watching a game, I'm usually not thinking very hard about who it is on the call.
Greg McElroy was the color analyst for that game.
Oh, okay.
So Jesse Palmer. So basically 2/3 of the crew who was here for that game. Tessitore, you remember his. He's one of those that you just remember him being on the call.
Right. And he's a guy that I can usually like pick out. You know, the guys like that I can recognize, you know, when they're talking. But
I think this may have been the same group that was on the call of the Texas-Florida game the other day.
Oh, really?
I think it might have been. Texas beat Florida 49-17 over the weekend. And I tell you, they look really good. You know, I've watched a lot of Texas this year, but never really just a full game. And I didn't watch the full Florida game, but I watched a good bit of it. And their offense is phenomenal at finding ways to get their playmakers in space. It may be the best offense in the country just in that regard.
And that's such a bad recipe for the way Arkansas has performed in the last couple of weeks. That's such a bad matchup.
It seems like they are going to have the ability to challenge Arkansas in all three ways that the Razorbacks have struggled the last few weeks. You know, they struggled on those little short hitch rounds against LSU. They struggled on the bubble screens against Mississippi State. And obviously they struggled vertically against Ole Miss. And as I'm watching Texas, like, well, they can do that. And they're really good. I mean, Ewers, it's interesting. They had a stat during the game the other day that said on passes of 6 or more yards down the field, his accuracy actually is really not that good, which tells you that a lot of what Texas is going to do is the short passing, you know, make a guy miss and then try to get yards after the catch. But as I'm watching him, he hit some deep passes, and he had another deep pass or two where the receiver just flat out dropped it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that it's so much on the quarterback, but I feel like as I was watching them, and you hear people say this all the time, like Saban says that Sarkisian is the best play caller in the game. Chris Doering was on here the other day, said that Sarkisian is what his offenses do are so unique to the game right now. And it just feels like after watching them play Florida, a team with some similar defensive metrics as Arkansas right now, that this might be a tough day for Arkansas's defense.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned kind of that short passing game, and wasn't it LSU that really beat Arkansas with that? For they really struggled with that, and in a way that we hadn't really seen them do to that extent, I guess, against LSU, and you know that game wasn't close. And so, I think this is a bad matchup for some of the struggles Arkansas has had.
There have been, you know, and you think about during this. Since the first bye week, when Arkansas has struggled this year, a lot of times it's been a veteran quarterback on the other side, whether it be Nussmeier from LSU. We saw what Jackson Dart did. Probably even put Alan Bowman in that category because, I mean, obviously he's a seventh-year quarterback, and he had a lot of success after halftime against Arkansas. Not to say that they've all been veterans that have hurt Arkansas. I mean, you know, Michael Van Buren, he had a big game for Mississippi State, at least leading the team up and down the field. Now, there were turnover problems in that game. Marcel Reed for A&M didn't really have a great game against Arkansas. But it seems like when the defense has really struggled this year, it's been a veteran quarterback leading the opposing offense, and that's what you're going to get with Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, early in the year, it felt like we were talking about some young quarterbacks and things like that that Arkansas kept facing, and, you know, those tended to be the games they did a little bit better. But, yeah, it's interesting how that works, because I think sometimes you can make the argument, you know, like, how much does experience help? How much does it really matter? But I think it does. I'm in the camp that it does matter a lot, and I think looking at Arkansas's games is really proof of that. Because, yeah, like you said, I mean, Van Buren is kind of an outlier. But, yeah, I just – Ewers knows what he's doing, and I just think the skills that he has and the receivers he has and everything that they have working around him is just not – I worry that Arkansas is not up to the task.
Texas has opened as a 13.5-point favorite in this game in Fayetteville on Saturday. And that's really, Christina, without knowing, and we still don't know. By the time you watch this, we may know. But that's without knowing the status of Talen Green for the game. Sam Pittman said last week on the SEC coaches call that he'd probably know more Monday about whether or not Green's going to be able to go.
Yeah, so we'll talk to him, you know, as we're recording this here in about hour 15. But I just, even, I still don't think we're going to know. I think they're going to play that, you know, close to the vest. And same with Jaquindon Jackson. I just think they're not going to, you know, I think they'll kind of do a we'll see. I think he'll probably say we'll know more on Wednesday or whatever. You know, we'll probably get one of those, which that's fine. You know, we'll get the availability report on Wednesday, so we'll see how that looks. But I do imagine, you know, I don't think they're going to try to reveal as little as they can.
Yeah, Texas in the driver's seat for an SEC championship. After Arkansas, they play Kentucky at home. Then they go to Texas A&M. As of right now, there's only 3 1-loss teams in the SEC, at least in terms of you know, the conference standings. You got Texas, Texas A&M, so their game November 30th, assuming they don't lose before then, that'll cancel one of them out, or it possibly could cancel one of them out. You got Tennessee with 1 loss, but they got to play an angry Georgia team this week. This conference race is fascinating as we get down the stretch. I mean, right now, like I said, you got 3 1-loss teams, and then all of these teams are at 2 losses, and you know, who knows who's going to have 2 losses at the end of the year. But you got Georgia, Ole Miss, Alabama, Missouri, and LSU all have 2 losses. There are 3 weeks to go, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams that are still alive, it feels like, for Atlanta.
It's crazy. I mean, it has been such a weird year. It's funny. You rattled off that list of 2-loss teams, and, like, Missouri feels like the one that doesn't belong there. Like, I'm surprised to hear they have 2 losses. It feels like they have more than that, I guess. I mean, they tried to give it away the other night. But, no, it's funny. It's just a really, you know, this is what we love about college football. This is what we like about, you know, this is the kind of SEC. I don't know. I listened to a couple podcasts where they talk about how they like a dynasty and they like a team that's dominant and things like that. You know, they like seeing that. And I've never been that way. I like seeing a little bit of variety in there with who's at the top. So this is fun to me.
Blake?
Yeah, you know, you just rattled off that list of 2-loss teams, and Texas and Texas A&M still have to play, and one of them's going to have 2 losses. And if Georgia beats Tennessee, there's yet another 2-loss team. So you could have like 7 2-loss teams.
If Tennessee beats Georgia this weekend, which that game is in Athens, it feels to me like the SEC championship game is going to be Tennessee against the winner of Texas and Texas A&M. And I think it'll probably be Texas, because A&M, they're not the A&M that we saw 3 or 4 weeks ago. Due to some injuries, and obviously they're still having some quarterback problems. And so potentially Texas and Tennessee, that feels like maybe the most likely matchup to me. But again, when we say that's the most likely, it assumes that Tennessee's got to go into Georgia and win a game against the Bulldogs.
What is your impression of Tennessee? Because I feel like, for me, it has wavered so much throughout the season. It's
gone
really up and
down. Well, their defense is great. Their defense is the best defense in the SEC statistically. And the ratings that I have Tennessee as a favorite over Georgia this weekend.
Really? That's interesting. Because, I just
feel
like...
They were 6-0 last week, by the way, over the weekend.
Oh, yeah. Were they really?
6-0.
The efficiency ratings? I love reading those every week.
They had Ole Miss. Now, personally, this is kind of like, you know, like a coach. He's got this analytics chart in front of him, and you kind of have to balance what do the analytics say versus what's the gut say? Mm-hmm. So I picked Georgia because I thought Georgia in the rain would be better to beat Ole Miss. Obviously, that wasn't the case. But, I mean, you know, the analytics, they've been very, very good this year. I've been pleased with this. But, yeah, they got Tennessee as a favorite over Georgia.
That's interesting. Okay, that surprises me. I guess I just feel like without looking at the numbers and things, my just general impression of Tennessee has changed so much throughout the year. And a lot of that is probably due to watching Arkansas beat them, an Arkansas team that, you know, like we've talked about.
That was
about
their
before.
Worst game of the year by far.
Yeah, that's their Ole Miss losing to Kentucky, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so. Yeah, Iamaliava was injured.
Yes.
The other day, and so that could play a factor in that. We'll get into more of that. I want to go back to the tiebreaker, so real quick.
Yeah.
Because I got an email in August. It was like right before the season started, and it was like SEC announces football tie-breaking process. And I remember, you know, it's one of those things that you see it, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's like, oh, I remember that. You know, it's like it kind of foreshadows something that you need to know. This is the tie-breaking process, by the way. If there are a bunch of two-loss teams, which it certainly looks like that could easily be the case to determine who goes to Atlanta. A, what's the head-to-head competition among the tied teams? Well, that would take a while to put together if you got about, you know, five or six of them. B, what's the record versus all common conference opponents among the tied teams? C, what's the record against the highest placed common conference opponent in the conference standings? That may be what ultimately determines it, because you can break a lot of ties at that point. Cumulative conference winning percentage of all the conferences among the tied teams. Well, that would, I mean, they're tied for a reason. You know, total scoring margin versus all conference opponents among the tied teams. So you basically get into, it's like high school football where, you know, how much did you beat the teams by? You see this a lot of times in late October or November where teams, they have to kind of run up the score in high school football because they know they might get into a tiebreaker process, and that might be the difference between them getting a bye in the first week of the playoffs or them having to play that week. Or this would be fun. F, a random draw of the tied teams.
I mean, I can hope you imagine, we get that someday.
You know, SEC Network, they take cameras into the Birmingham office, and here's Greg Sankey walking out with like a, you know, a stovetop hat, and he's got all the names in here, and he just puts his hand in and like,
yep.
Oh, it's Alabama.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
That would be so exciting.
But Alabama. Honestly. But unbeknownst to everyone else, Alabama's the only name in the hat.
Exactly. I know. I was going to say that the immediate aftermath of that would be every name, you know, it was rigged.
I actually think what you would do there, if you wanted to rig it, you would not put the teams that are still in playoff consideration in the hat, because it's like, well, if Ole Miss plays in Atlanta, they could lose. Or if Alabama plays in Atlanta, they could lose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's go get Missouri.
Yeah.
You know, you guys aren't going there anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be – I'll be curious to see the playoff rankings this week after, you know, Miami loss, you know, all that. I vote in the Football Writers Association poll. It's just – it's a top 16 ranking, and I was like, I don't even know what to do at number four. So, yeah, I'll be curious to see what the committee makes of this weekend that was just kind of a strange weekend of games.
We got a lot more thoughts about SEC football. We'll have them after this.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass. For all your glass market needs with the highest quality products, you can come by and see us right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. If you just stumbled upon our podcast, there's lots of ways that you can find us. We're on Apple, we're on Spotify, we're on YouTube. Just search Whole Hog Sports in any of those, and you can find our podcast. I hope to see you again down the road. Going back to the SEC race, I've heard people complain about the lack of divisions and how if there were divisions, there'd be more, it'd be easier to figure all this out. I kind of like the fact that there's not divisions. On one hand, you do run the risk of teams getting an easier schedule, but there's no real guarantee that that's not going to happen even if you got divisions. I mean, look at what Georgia's faced in the SEC East for the last 6-7 years. There's been nobody really outside of Florida in 2020 that's been on Georgia's level. And so I like this. I like the chaos, and I like the fact that all of the games are going to be really interesting over these final – and it's not just the final 3 weeks. It's really been this way for about the last 3 weeks too. You know, what I've hated in the last couple of years where it's November 4th and Georgia and Alabama have already clinched their spots in the SEC championship game, and it just kind of feels like a slow march to Atlanta over the final few weeks of November. I like the fact that there's a lot of intrigue about the SEC and the fact that there's probably going to be an SEC championship game that we've never seen before.
Right, I do too. I mean, it's like I was saying, it's, you know, some people I think like to see, you know, the dynasty kind of thing, the repeats, whatever. And there is something, you know, exciting about that too. But I would much rather have, like you said, the chaos. You know, like that's what makes college football fun, mm-hmm. is that it truly feels like anything can happen. But that in the SEC hasn't always felt as true, because like you said, you get 4 weeks left and it feels like a foregone conclusion, and there's not a lot, you know, everybody else is just kind of around. And so, you know, I like this too. I think, you know, sure, it might be easier to figure out the tiebreakers or the standing, but like that's somebody else's job. I don't have to figure it out. I want to know what they come up with, and I think it's fun. You know, I think it's fun. I like the, you know, I think the word parody gets thrown around, and I think, you know, I don't know if that's the word I would use exactly. I like that it's been unpredictable.
As you see over the weekend, Ole Miss beat Georgia 28-10 in Oxford to keep their playoff hopes alive. In the other big game of the day, Alabama beat LSU 42-13 at Death Valley, and LSU scored a touchdown with 11 seconds left. Otherwise, it would have been even more far-fetched. If I were picking two teams I wouldn't want to play right now, and I'm talking about nationally, it'd be Alabama and Georgia. I know they've got two losses.
Yeah.
But based on what we've seen from them over the last few weeks, they look really, really, really good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Alabama especially kind of got written off a little bit there. But I think, you know, it's kind of like it happened, a season or two ago, where mm-hmm. they kind of got written off. They had some early trouble. They didn't look like their usual selves. And then they turned around and made the playoff and had a great, you know. And so I think they maybe got written off, which feels crazy to say about Alabama. That people
and they found their
Alabama.
Defense.
Yes.
That's the offense has been good all year. The defense is what was keeping them back there in the middle part of the season. And now they found the defense, and they feel like a pretty complete team.
Yeah, they really do. And that ability to make adjustments like that and change, you know, fix your problems during the season, that is the difference between bad teams and good teams, you know, and it's something that we've been asking to see from Arkansas, and that fans that have teams that are struggling across the country, no matter where you are asking of their teams too, and just not everybody can do it.
Unless they make the SEC championship game and they lose in Atlanta, Alabama's making the playoffs. This is their final three games: Mercer, Oklahoma, and that OU offense, and then Auburn and that Auburn offense.
Yeah,
they're not losing to those teams.
No, if they do, we got a problem. But yeah,
there's no way they're losing those teams.
Yeah, no, they won't. And yeah, I mean it's definitely favorable for them. And yeah, I think they're going to be there.
Yeah, I think they're certainly going to be there. And then I also think Ole Miss is going to be there.
Yeah, who do they have left?
I know they got Mississippi State.
Oh yeah.
Do you see Mississippi State slowing down that offense?
No. Absolutely not.
Here's a question. Does Lane try to hang 90 on Mississippi State? Because he could.
Maybe.
He absolutely could.
He definitely could. And it's funny. The Egg Bowl is always so fun to watch, and I don't think it's going to be a lot of fun this year.
No, I don't think it's going to be. And that game is in Oxford, too. I mean, not that makes any, you know, real difference, I think, between these teams, but
right.
It is a home game for Ole Miss. Ole Miss has this week off. Then they go to Florida. Okay. I mean, I assume that they would win that game. And then they finish with Mississippi State. I think both of those teams are making the playoffs.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And it's just the Ole Miss, the loss to Kentucky just gets weirder and weirder. I'll never get over it. You know, like by all the metrics we've looked at, you know, your efficiency ratings, things like that, like Ole Miss is so good. And then it's just crazy that they have this bad loss. And both of those losses were close. But it's just another example of how weird this year has been and how some of those records are shaking out so strangely. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to play them either. And, yeah, like you said, Georgia and Alabama for sure.
So, like, what would you talk about ranking teams earlier and what you do for the Football Writers. What would your top five be in the SEC right now?
Ooh. Top five in the SEC. I mean, I think it's hard to put Ole Miss at the top because of the two losses. But
they're number one to me.
Yeah. In terms of, like, just, like, the way that they're playing, I think.
And just what you see on the field.
Yeah.
Like the talent that you see on the field, it is as talented a team. It wasn't a deal on Saturday where they played Georgia and it was like, hey, Georgia's got or Ole Miss has got less talented players who are just outplaying these guys. They are equal.
Yeah.
Equal between Ole Miss and Georgia.
Yeah. I put Texas probably do I want to put them second? I might put them second. And then probably Georgia. And Georgia's offense, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't trust them.
I don't either. That's the problem. I think they're playing better and the offense is so shaky and you just don't know what you're
going to
get.
The trouble they had against Florida, I think, was really alarming.
Yes.
And I don't know that I really – and again, I picked Georgia to beat Ole Miss, even though the numbers said don't do that. The offense is a problem for Georgia.
Yeah.
Carson Beck does not look like the same player that he did a year ago.
No, definitely not. And it's just been so odd. It's been so strange to watch. But okay, so I've got Ole Miss, I've got Texas. Who do I want third? I would say I don't know why I don't have as much faith in because if you look at the standings right now, it's Tennessee and Texas A&M.
Tennessee hasn't played a very tough schedule.
They haven't. And I just like we've talked about, I think the defense is the strength. I think the offense is not what we thought it was going to be. Texas A&M I struggle with too. I don't know. I don't know where I would put them. I would go, okay, I'm just going to make, okay, executive decision. Ole Miss, Texas.
Is this in order?
Yeah, I'm trying to be. Okay. I guess, okay, let me just pick five first. Ole Miss, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Texas A&M.
Okay.
It feels crazy to leave Tennessee out of there, but I don't know. I guess I just don't really believe in them.
Efficiency ratings, you know what they get?
What
they got Ole Miss 1, Texas 2, Alabama 3, Tennessee 4, Georgia 5.
Okay, so I'm overrating Texas
A&M. And they've got South Carolina ahead of Texas A&M.
Okay, so I'm overrating Texas A&M. I don't know what it is about Tennessee. And I think I'm underrating Alabama a little bit too. I think, like I said, I think they got written off, and I think I am part of that. I think I have tried to wrap my head around the kind of ups and downs that they've had and try to evaluate like where they are now.
South Carolina's another team I wouldn't want to play right now.
Yeah. Yeah. They've had what a weird year that's been.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the first time, you know this well, that a team has gone into Columbia and had their playoff hopes dashed potentially the way that Texas A&M did the other day. Now, it's not a total, because you got the 12-team playoff, it doesn't totally take Texas A&M out of the equation, but I think with A&M's injuries and the fact they've still got to play Texas, it's going to be tough for them to make it. But then South Carolina looked really good the other day against Vanderbilt, too.
Yeah, they've been another team that it's like, what version of them are you going to get?
And Rocket Sanders, that's been the key to them.
He's really come on,
the last 2 weeks. And it's not just running the ball, it's receiving, too. Yeah. He's been really good in the passing game the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I like Lenora Sellers, too. I think, you know, he's been interesting to watch. And you know, they've been hard to kind of get a grip on, but they kind of always are. They always kind of, they play spoiler, like you said, they dash some playoff hopes and then they lose a game or two that they shouldn't. They're always kind of, that's kind of been their brand over the last few years.
Okay, so just talk a little bit more about what we saw over the weekend. How about Missouri, Oklahoma? Did you see the end of that?
Yeah, that was crazy. That was one that we had on and I was like half paying attention. And I remember Missouri scored, I think maybe their first touchdown of that quarter.
It's like a 10-9 game with 4 minutes left. And then all of a sudden it just.
Yeah. And Missouri scored, I think, their first touchdown of that quarter. And one of the broadcasters, again, like I said, I never recognized who they are.
That was Tom Hart, Jordan Rogers, and Cole Kublik.
Okay. So it was one of the two guys in the booth was like, there's been an offensive explosion. And I was like, they scored one touchdown. It's 16-9. What are we doing? And then it became an offensive explosion and two defensive touchdowns, which was so crazy. It was an offensive explosion and an offensive collapse at the same time.
And I was going to say offensive implosion is what it turned into. That wild, if you didn't see it. If you didn't see it, you got to go back and find it. I mean, Missouri scores two touchdowns in the final 63 seconds to win that game against Oklahoma. I was actually I was listening to Oklahoma's radio broadcast. Mm-hmm. They were just sick to their stomachs, as you might be able to imagine. Mentioned Tennessee beat Mississippi State 33-14. Nico Iamaliava injured during that game. We'll find out, I guess, early this week what his status is going to be against Georgia. Not a whole lot said about that injury after the game. South Carolina beat Vanderbilt 28-7. And then in non-conference, the game that was really the game of the day, even though it ended the next day, this is twice this year where I have been up at 1 a.m. watching BYU stun somebody. They did it to Oklahoma State on a Friday night a few weeks back, and then they beat Utah the other night in Salt Lake City. And, you know, I've changed my vernacular from Pac-12 After Dark to Big 12 After Dark because all these teams are now in the Big 12. And Big 12 After Dark has turned out to be so much more fun than Pac-12 After Dark. But this BYU-Utah game was crazy. And I'm sure you've probably seen it, but BYU, they kick a field goal with 3 seconds, 4 seconds left to beat Utah when it looked like they were absolutely dead in the water. And this is a clip from Fox 13 in Utah, and it just shows what the reaction was from the Utah AD and the Utah football coach. You don't get this every day.
This game was absolutely stolen from us. We were excited about being in the Big 12, but tonight I am not. We won this game. Someone else stole it from us. Very disappointed. I will talk to the commissioner. This was not fair to our team. I'm disgusted by the professionalism of the officiating crew tonight.
Unfortunate way to lose a ball game. Proud of our guys, proud of our players. They battled. They should hold their heads high. It's not on them. It's not on them. They played hard. They did everything they could from start to finish. Things out there were ridiculous. Game was all but over. Yeah, it was over. But then it wasn't. It's kind of been the story for several games. We play lights out and just can't get that one last stop. Thank you.
The chair throw chair at the end.
Amazing. Yeah, the chair is perfect.
Mark Harlan, he did speak to the Big 12 commissioner, Brett Yormark, and this is what Brett had to say on Sunday. He said, quote, "Mark's comments irresponsibly challenge the professionalism of officials and the integrity of the Big 12 conference. There's a right and wrong way to voice concerns. Unfortunately, Mark chose the wrong way. Accordingly, this violation warrants a public reprimand and a financial penalty. The Big 12 conference prioritizes professionalism, integrity, and fairness, and will continue to do so." Harlan was fined $40,000. That is a moment where, you know, it's like there are fans out there who want you just to go all scorched earth after you lose a game like that. And I think that this is a reminder of when you let your emotions get the best of you, it's not always – it doesn't – like what did he really accomplish by doing that, by saying what he did about the Big 12?
Yeah, it's
– quite frankly, I don't think he was correct. I watched the game, and it looked like a holding penalty was correctly assessed on Utah that allowed a BYU drive to continue, and then Utah just didn't make a play at the end, and that's been the problem with Utah all year.
Yeah, I mean, this is such an odd situation. You know, as an observer, as someone who has no, you know, skin in that game, not a fan of either program, don't cover either program, I it's interesting. You know, it's something, it's one of those kind of quirky stories that comes up during the season that gives us, you know, something interesting to talk about, something weird to point at. But I think, yeah, as far as what it accomplishes for his own program, I don't know what it accomplishes. He issued a statement. It wasn't exactly an apology, but it was more an explanation. And then he was like, "We're proud to be a part of the Big 12. We look forward to working with our peers to continue to enhance the league. All the best to BYU." You know, so it was like one of those.
AKA translated, please send us our revenue check.
Yes. So just a very odd situation. He needed like where was the communications person to like be a get back coach and be like, go, you know, you don't need to get on the microphone. Not necessary right now. If you want to put, like, we'll craft a statement and put it out tomorrow saying that we've sent these things to the league. You know, like, where was the get back coach for this? Because this was a very interesting choice.
I'm also curious, did he come in before or after the head coach?
I don't know.
Because I watched, I tried to find this, and I found, you know, where some players came in, and then there's, like, a little bit of a lull, and then there's Whittingham comes in. And then this is from the Utah Athletics YouTube account, and then it just stops. In fact, it stops before he throws the chair. So you don't get that if you watch the Utah version of this. They kind of sanitize it a little bit. I want to know, though, did he come in before or did he come in after the coaches and the players spoke?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out, but I can't find it.
But you could see him, and you saw him in that video. He's on the field at the end of the game, like as the referee is announcing an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty on Utah on the final play of the game, like wagging his finger in the face of the head referee.
Oh yeah, that's one of my favorite things in a college. When you get a finger wag, that's you know you're in for a treat. No, it's just a very odd, you know, that I guess that those kinds of things are the kind of thing you expect from a coach where the press conference is concerned. Mm-hmm. You know, most coaches will say like, well, I don't want to get fined, blah, 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 you know, but you expect a coach to comment on things like that. You don't expect the AD to hop on the mic when they don't normally do that after a game and sound off in that way. It's very strange.
Just shocking, yeah. Honestly.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, and I think the biggest thing that people kind of jumped on was the basically his expressing, you know, I thought I wanted to be in the Big 12 and now I'm not sure. Basically, I can't remember what the exact line was. It was not that. That's not the direct quote. But he said, yeah, we were excited about being in the Big 12, but tonight I am not, is the actual quote. And it's just, that's such a bold thing to say that you didn't have to say.
Utah BYU, that's one of those underrated rivalries that I feel like if you don't live there, you don't understand just how much hatred, dislike maybe is between those teams. So BYU, this is a team that, you know, at some point the magic I feel like is going to run out for them, but it may not be until the postseason.
Yeah.
I mean, they may go ahead and get through the Big 12 undefeated. Boy, it's been a crazy year for them. Just some of the outcomes that they've had and some of the wins that they've had. They're one of four undefeated teams left in college football now. The others are Oregon, who's obviously number one. You've got Indiana, still undefeated after they beat Michigan the other day. And Army, undefeated, 9-0. So, Army, I think, still has to play Notre Dame.
Yes, they do. That's so going to be a big one.
That could be a really – that might be one – like if Army were to beat Notre Dame, Army all of a sudden I think has to start getting real playoff consideration as the top – you know, the top-ranked team from a group of five conference.
Definitely. This is a huge – I believe that's this weekend. And that is a huge thing for their playoff resume. I mean, it's the crazy thing about their situation, too, is the fact that the Army-Navy game is basically inconsequential in terms of playoff contention. And it's so funny because you can tell the way it was set up, they never thought they would have to deal with Army and Navy being good and potentially contending for a playoff. Navy, not so much anymore.
Well,
but
I think isn't there still a possibility that Army and Navy could play in a conference championship game the week before the Army-Navy game?
Yes. Isn't that crazy? And it's so funny how like nobody ever thought they would be in this situation. And then in year one of the new playoff format, here it is. But yeah, BYU has left. They have Kansas, Arizona State, and Houston left. All of those winnable, but also not necessarily, you know, easy wins. So yeah, they could definitely still stumble. It's just, yeah, it's the unbeaten teams that are left are so odd. I love Indiana. I'm so excited for them. I just, it's like we keep going back to, this is the stuff that we love about college football. I like years like this where there's these, you know, unexpected teams that you find yourself rooting for that you've never known anything about before, you know? And yeah, I mean, I think it'd be great if BYU finished the season undefeated. You know, I hope they do. I think that would be an amazing story.
So Tulane is still undefeated in that conference.
Oh,
but
are they really?
let's say that Navy were able to make it up there and Army were still undefeated they would actually play on Army's campus, I guess. They would play at West Point, the conference championship game, and then they would turn around the next week and play each other.
In the Army-Navy game, yeah.
Yeah, and then also Army, if they were to get into the playoff, I guess they would just have to keep going. Very weird.
Yeah.
There was a lot of talk before the playoff was expanded about what do we do with the Army-Navy game, and this could really maybe enhance that conversation, depending on how this goes. It's very fascinating. Notre Dame and Navy, or Notre Dame Army, is not this week.
It's next weekend.
Week.
Okay. Yeah. So that's going to be one to watch for sure.
All right. We hope you come to our website, wholehogsports.com, throughout the day. Obviously, lots of Razorback coverage today. What Sam Pittman has to say at his weekly news conference. We mentioned earlier women's basketball tonight in Little Rock. Also, the NCAA soccer tournament field being announced. And probably some Razorback basketball articles there too. Wholehogsports.com. We'll have another podcast tomorrow. Hope to see you then. Have a great day, everyone.